A little early, Director, but take it away.
All right. Well, I have a few items I'd like to talk about, and then I'm going to have some staff and Joe help on a couple other issues. But first, I want to talk to a little bit about our Wild Future effort. It's been going along really fine. We're in the kind of in-betweens time right now. We've had about 15 public meetings. Talk to folks all over the state, listen to their interests and values, what they would like to see the department to look like into the future, and recorded their information, and then we put that into our budget, and we brought forth a proposal that we presented to the governor's office, and so now we're in the refinement stage, I guess you could say. We responded to a lot of the public input. We've tightened up some of the dollar requests, and we know that there's more of that coming down the pike. So now we're just getting ready, I guess, preparing for the legislative session. Raquel and I have, and others have been out on the, I guess, the stump talking to legislators, and we've been getting, a respectful reception from folks. They realize that we do have an issue and we do need to do some funding enhancement. And of course, at this point, no one's in total support, but we're getting a lot of general support and a lot of understanding for our issues. So we'll continue to move forward and we'll keep you more in tune to that, and Joe's going to have a couple of little budget items that have come up and that we're working on right now. But not sure how much you've heard of from your local legislators or if you've talked to people. But as we move along, we'll be reaching out to you to ask you for help, maybe contacting some folks and working with some individuals. And it's going to be a full court press as we get into the legislative session in January, February, March. So anyway, that's where we're at with Wild Future. I will just mention wolves a bit. Thank you for that testimony. As of October 19th, we stood down from our control action on the profanity peak pack. We had gotten to the point where we were no longer being efficient at all. Some people would argue we were past that point a while before the 19th. Wolves are very intelligent animals, and the more you try to trap them or catch them, whatever, the more they are trained and learn to avoid that. And so cattle were removed from the range. I think the takeoff date was around the 15th. So that conflict went away. However, we're still watching the profanity peak pack and certainly care about any interactions they would have on private ground throughout this winter and spring. And there are also other packs that have had some dust-ups with livestock over the winter. We're watching them also. I think everyone knows that as our wolf populations increase, the probability of them interacting with livestock and killing livestock also increases. And so we will be in this situation from now on in trying to learn how and figuring out how Washington is going to deal with livestock depredations and wolves. I think that the acknowledgement of the work that Francine Madden has done and the conflict transformation work has certainly put us in a very different place with the profanity peak pack than we were in prior to that. I wasn't here, but from what I understand, much more understanding and support from all sectors. And I think that effort up front, bringing people together, has paid huge dividends. I'll just be frank. I'm concerned about our capacity into the future. We're at a point where wolf populations are increasing. They've been increasing at about 30% a year. And with that, our capacity to continue to do adequate non-lethal work to, you know, prevent livestock depredation, and just our capacity to deal with all livestock conflict is going to be strained. And so we're going to have to work extra hard to do whatever we can to make sure that populations increase in a way that the public can accept those increases. So very interesting topic. Well, from now and through the first of the year, we'll be putting our numbers together and determining what the population is from the monitoring. We're using a telemetry-based method right now, and it has its weaknesses, but we should get a good count on the wolves that we have collared, and we'll get our best estimate out, I think, right around the first of the year. So anyway, with that, I don't know if anyone has questions on wolves, but yeah, excuse me.
Quick comment for people to look into, and some of the work, I think it's Sam Wasser that is doing some of the DNA work on scats to show, you know, different populations of wolves in the state, and some pretty fascinating stuff. You might want to look into that. I think as an example, my numbers might not be quite right, but he looked at about a quarter of the pack's territories that exist in the state and found 57 distinct DNA markers. So that would indicate we probably have, and I think the department knows this, we have more wolves than our count shows every year, but there may be quite a few more. So what you said about, you know, this is where we're going to be at for some time to come is right, spot on.
Yeah, in general, and when you start to estimate wildlife populations, you know, just visibility bias alone usually runs about 60% in big game populations. And so if you see 60, there was actually 100 out there, just as a rule of thumb. Certainly not, don't take that to the bank, but as a rule of thumb, just on visibility bias. So there are animals out there that we're not counting, we're not aware of. The one thing about wolves is they're not very subtle, and when they do get somewhere and have a pack, then they make themselves known. And so you do find out about pack distribution better, or, you know, more than a lot of other animals that are more secretive, like lions or bears, for example. So anyway, we'll continue to watch it. I just saw an article on Oregon, too, that they're increasing at about the same tack as us, and I think they had about 110 wolves now is their estimate. So anyway, we'll see how that comes out. A third item I wanted to just give a brief update on, and we'll be getting more of this as we move along, but is the status of our Mitchell Act hatcheries in the Columbia. As folks are aware, there's been a third-party lawsuit against NOAA and their funding of the hatcheries down there, and in response to that, NOAA has been proposing some reductions in production, and we've been working with NOAA very closely for the last few weeks, trying to provide some options to them to make the reductions as minimal as possible and still meet some of the needs from the genetics standpoint. This is a big deal for us because we receive about $5.5 million annually from NOAA to run a hatchery program, and so it's very important money that produces a lot of fish that are taken by commercial fishermen along the coast and even up into West Coast Vancouver Island. And so there's tribal impacts, commercial and recreational impacts. And it could also impact our negotiations on the Pacific Salmon Treaty. So it's something we're watching very carefully. We'll keep you informed. We've provided some proposals to NOAA on Chinook, and we'll do the same on coho production. We're working very closely with Oregon, but it's something in the mill, and just wanted to make you all aware of that. Next week, myself, Brad Smith, and others, staff, I'm not sure, maybe Commissioner Thorburn and others are going to be attending a Wildlife Leaders Forum here in Seattle at SeaTac. I'm not sure if you're going to be at that or not. But anyway, this is a coming together of people from around Washington and a few out of state experts to talk about alternative funding for fish and wildlife management in Washington in particular. most folks know that people around the country are looking at ways to enhance our ability to manage all wildlife, including animals that are not hunted and fished. And so this is an opportunity to get together and have a frank discussion about that and about how we might go about increasing funding in Washington. We're also going to get a report from Ron Reagan of OFWA about the Blue Ribbon Panel and their national efforts to increase funding capacity in a Pittman Robertson, Dingell Johnson-like program that's being developed for watchable wildlife and for species of greatest conservation needs. So it'll be an interesting couple of days, and we'll report back to you on the results of that. Chairman Smith has been very involved in the planning of this, and so he'll be present. We'll provide a update at maybe our next commission meeting. But it should be an interesting couple of days. Your agenda kind of packs some of the major issues that I know you want updates on. We'll talk a little bit over the next couple of days about North of Falcon, or not a little bit. We'll get into some of the details of North of Falcon, the how we're going to approach our permitting process, and several other items that I know the commission wants to hear more about. I won't try to wax on those.
Is there any update, or is it pretty wrapped up, the security breach of that computer?
Oh, good point. So where we're at with this security breach, we've secured our systems. We're back up and running. We are in the process, however, and it's in your folder of updating or completing our selection and implementation of a new vendor. So we're very excited about that. They will have the most modern security capabilities and all of that. But as far as the breach goes, Active Outdoors has done what they could, and I think an incredible job contacting people that were in the license system whose personal information was compromised. In Washington, their financial or credit card information was not made available. However, their name, license, driver's license number, and the last four digits of people's Social Security number were compromised. And so we've provided notice to those people. They can access free credit monitoring. And kind of the standard regime, I don't know how many of you, this is the third or fourth time my information has been compromised, and I've been treated the same way by every company that's done it. So it's kind of a standard protocol. Just in this particular instance, I got three letters, so I wasn't too happy with that. But there was, of course, concern, and we were very concerned, and we provided information to people as soon as we could. Of course, we shut down our system, and we, I think, took stronger measures than other states to protect people's information and make double sure that we knew the extent of the breach, and actually made free licenses available for a few days to get us through that period in order to protect, or to get people on the water and to protect guides and outfitters that wanted to make sure that their clients were legal. So public comment has slowed in terms of us receiving questions and information. And Active Outdoors, of course, has an open call-in line that they're helping people with any concerns. Definitely not something we would like to go through again. Shout out to our staff in licensing and IT. They did a fabulous job working on this and really did a good job understanding it. We're also working with the state cybersecurity network here in Washington to try to beef up our security across the board. This was a bit of a wake-up call for the state in general, as it turns out, but state systems need to be updated, and we need to beef up across the board. And you're seeing more and more just in the, you know, with this election, some of the hacking accusations that are out there. It's a national issue and something we need to be really steadfast on, and you know, and make sure that we're following up on that. Any other items that people have questions on within the report? Or with that, I think I'll have Joe give a brief update on a couple budget items. And
yep. Thanks, Director. Good morning, Commissioners. Just wanted to kind of keep you in the loop on this evolving budget package. You know, when we talked about this in August and September, we knew on the wild future side, and as well as the other components, that we would continue to make modifications, and that the package was a placeholder. One of the things that's changed here recently has to do with the funding we got for the conservation conflict transformation, the effort that Francine Madden has led us through with the WAG. And in the last budget, we received some funding to carry that forward through this biennium and next. And if you looked at it was also for wolf livestock damage prevention contracts. We had funding there too. And if you looked at the budget notes, it was described as ongoing funding, so we had expected to have it as part of our base into the future. And when we came to you and talked to you, that was our understanding. In late August, we heard from legislative staff, budget staff, that the final changes in the final budget notes hadn't occurred in what was sent out, and that the funding was instead one-time money. So we've been working with OFM, Governor's Office, who they also understood it to be ongoing, and so they were surprised. And because we thought it was ongoing, it wasn't part of the budget package that you saw. So what OFM has done, Governor's Office has done, is encouraged us to submit a supplemental or an additional budget package. And so we have developed that for both the wolf livestock conflict piece as well as the conflict transformation piece. And we'll be submitting that to the Governor's Office for consideration in his December budget. So if you want to see a copy of that, I'd be happy to provide that. We're putting the final touches on that as we speak.
To that point, Joe, would it help to make some phone calls to some of the players in that, or are you seeing that maybe, needless to say, there's a chance of that going away? Or
well, you know, it's hard to tell. There's general fund involved. The governor's office understands the importance of it. They've seen the benefits that the WAG process has provided. So I'm not sure calls to the governor's office would help.
But to legislators?
But legislators, once if it gets into the governor's budget or not, you know, calls to the legislators would be helpful.
Okay. Are you getting, can you read the tea leaves with the legislators? Or?
Oh, you know, most of them are running for re-election and they're not thinking about next session yet, so it's hard to tell.
Okay, just one quick item. I do want, if you would just notice on page 9 of the report, just a shout out to our camp folks that have been working hard on the culverts that we have control over. We finished our last one and within the deadline. So quite a bunch of work there, $5.7 million worth of construction work, and we took care of 43 fish passage issues on our own private, or our own department property. So I'm proud of all the great work that they did. And with that, I would like to ask a couple staff to come up and use some of my time. First, Jennifer, would you come up? I want Jennifer to talk about the Puget Sound state-federal MOU, and this is a big deal. And those of you that have been around a while should be very proud of yourselves for the 20-plus years of work that's gone into making this happen. And so Jennifer's going to provide you some details, and she's certainly carried a lot of water on this one and deserves a lot of credit, but lots of people in the department and commission and past directors deserve a bunch of credit on this one. So,
good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning. For the record, Jennifer Kwan, Government Affairs Director. So I'll start this with just a fun fact that's been uncovered over the past couple of years, and that is, did you guys know the Puget Sound is the biggest estuary by volume in the nation? So it used to be thought that Chesapeake Bay over on the East Coast was the biggest one, but it turns out we have more water in our estuary. So that's something we've been trying to tout back in D.C. And for the last number of years, under the leadership of a couple congressional congressmen and the Puget Sound caucus led by Representative Kilmer and Representative Heck, along with, you know, the department, Puget Sound Partnership, and a number of other leaders in the Puget Sound recovery community, including marine businesses, other industries, local governments, and even tribes, have been working really hard at the federal level to try and get the Obama administration to recognize the significance of Puget Sound, the need for more recovery funding, and a coordinated effort with the federal agencies to move recovery forward. To date, that effort has been successful. So a couple of weeks ago, President Obama's environmental advisor, Christy Golthus, she's the managing director of the Center of Council on Environmental Quality, came out to see Puget Sound herself, and that was at the invitation of the governor's office. The Department of Fish and Wildlife participated in that event, and we were tasked with highlighting some of the recent successes of habitat restoration in Puget Sound, and specifically the Fur Island Farm restoration we've done up in the Skagit. So it was exciting to be able to show off the good work we've done and show Ms. Golthus that Puget Sound is a really good investment. She also made an announcement when she was out here, of a renewed Puget Sound MOU, which I've passed out. That's the first document that you've seen. And the MOU is, there has been an MOU in the past. This one is a renewed one that actually has actions associated with it. So it establishes a task force that has both regional leadership components as well as DC leadership components. And their first task is in the next 90 days to put together a federal action plan regarding recovery that's consistent with both tribal priorities and state priorities. And for WDFW, I expect we will see items and help on fish barrier removal and other things like habitat conservation and restoration. So very exciting to get that level of recognition. What's nice about this MOU and the actions is that it will outlive the Obama administration, and so it'll carry forward a lot of the momentum that's already been built and around Puget Sound recovery. So I expect that to continue. The other thing, so I'll be referring to the next handout that was announced in conjunction with this MOU, was an announcement by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers where they have signed a chief's report on the Puget Sound Nearshore Ecosystem Restoration Project. That's a project that we've been in a partnership with the Corps over the last 15 years. And what that chief's report does is culminates this 15-year study that did an assessment of the nearshore environment and highlighted where the biggest bang of environmental benefits would happen. So it's very much a scientific study. The next step would be that we would take this study and go have a conversation with the local communities that this study highlights and see if there's a viable design to move forward within those local communities. The chief's report right now makes recommendations to move forward three big projects. There's a project in the Duckabush, a project in the Lower Skagit, and a project in the Nooksack. What's significant about this study is that these are big projects. We're pretty much past all the low-hanging fruit restoration projects in the Puget Sound, and we're going to have to move to some bigger restoration projects to move the needle on conservation in Puget Sound. So this is a significant culmination of that study. The report also recommends further study of 9 bigger projects that can be done into the future. So the handout that I gave you highlights those 3 projects on the back, but it also, there's a map in there of Puget Sound where you can see where those big projects are being put in place, as well as a number of smaller projects. A chief's report is only good and active if it is passed by Congress in the Water Resources Development Act, which is an act that's only taken up every 2 to 7 years. We are fortunate that Congress is looking at taking up a Water Resources Development Act right now. And this report has been added to the House version of the Water Resources Development Act. It's not in the Senate version yet, but that was because it came out after the report came out after the Senate passed their WERDA. But we expect that it will make it into conference. And if their Congress is able to pass a WERDA, we're hopeful that it will be in WERDA, the Water Resources Development Act, by the end of this year. So what that does is it's basically a pledge from the federal government. It does not commit any of us to construction. It basically allows us to go and share the information and the study from the local communities and talk to them about a project. If a project design is viable within those communities, and it'll probably take 3 to 6 years before we would even know that, we would then work with the communities and Congress to seek construction funding. But I just want to be clear, there's been some confusion about that, that the authorization is really a federal pledge of support. It allows us to have further conversations. It doesn't result in immediate construction or require us to go forward with any construction, but allows us to have further in detailed conversations with the local communities. So we're really excited about this. If this does go through, we have a lifetime of work ahead of us. Any questions?
I just would like to say that this is a huge accomplishment. I mean, this piece of business on Puget Sound is critically important going forward, and I thank you for your efforts. I'd like to ask that maybe we could get a periodic update biannually or whatever you think would be appropriate. I think this is something that's beyond important to all of us. So thank you. Any other questions by the commission? Thank you, Jennifer.
Yes, I'm very proud of the efforts on this. This is huge. It puts us on a, or potentially on a par with the restoration that's occurred in the Great Lakes and in Chesapeake Bay, and it's amazing. It's really neat that all the work has gone into this, and we'll see how it goes out into the future. So, anyway, very exciting. I'm going to have Craig Burley come up and talk a little bit about Puget Sound marine protected areas. When you arrived this morning, you had a letter in front of you, and this is a way we're going to propose that we speak to some of the Rockfish Recovery Plan, and we'd like to involve the commission directly in comments to NOAA on this one. So, Craig, go ahead.
Thank you, Director. Good morning, Vice Chair Carpenter and commissioners. As the director indicated before you, you have a draft letter to NOAA Fisheries. This is regarding the draft Puget Sound Rockfish Conservation Plan that NOAA has out for public comment. And the department received a pre-draft document last summer and developed a number of comments that we provided to NOAA Fisheries at that time in May of 2015. Since then, our staff have worked with NOAA to incorporate many of the comments that we provided at that time on the pre-draft. There is, though, a few comments that we still would like to see incorporated in that draft plan, and this letter provides NOAA with that further input. Specifically, one of the major points is the draft plan calls for implementing a network of marine protected areas and rockfish conservation areas in Puget Sound in the first few years of the implementation of the conservation plan. And this letter recommends that rather than implementing that network of MPAs and rockfish conservation areas, initially that rather The plan gives the department time to implement the current management strategies that are in place to protect rockfish in Puget Sound and to continue the evaluation that we started in 2010 to give that a chance to work before management strategies are changed in Puget Sound. And specifically, you may recall the commission adopted rules in 2010 with the listing of Puget Sound rockfish to reduce or close high-impact commercial fisheries in Puget Sound that would likely impact rockfish. Also, the commission closed the retention of rockfish in the recreational fishery in Puget Sound, as well as implementing a 120-foot depth restriction on bottom fish in Puget Sound to protect listed rockfish. Those measures, we think, the department thinks, are significant and have a high likelihood of showing some success in recovering rockfish, and again, would like to see the opportunity to continue those management actions and evaluate their success before a management strategy was changed. And so this draft letter in front of you is proposed to be signed by the chair of the commission and director and submitted to NOAA Fisheries. Take any questions.
Thank you.
I have
yes, Commissioner Thorburn.
Basic question. So an RCA would close rockfish fisheries, period, or?
Commissioner Thorburn, so a rockfish conservation area, there's some flexibility around the specific requirements there, but the intent is to provide specific protection for rockfish while providing other types of fishing opportunities. So it's somewhat flexible in nature.
Thank you, Craig. For the commission's sake, this the executive committee met and had a conference call, actually, and talked about the importance of supporting the department on this letter to NOAA, and has agreed. Our chair, Brad Smith, has agreed to sign it. I don't think we need to vote on this, do we? We just a wink and a nod, Craig, is that correct?
My understanding, Commissioner Carpenter, is that a general concurrence of the letter is sufficient.
Our counsel shaking his head, so thank you very much. Does anyone on the commission have any objection to this? Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. That pretty much concludes the director's report. I do just wanted to. I noticed that Steve Piesfeld is in the audience, and Steve's had some health issues, but he's back, and just wanted to welcome him. He would normally be giving you some kind of an update at this time of year, so.
And we'll expect that in the future, Steve. So make a note of that, please.
All right.
And thanks for all your work in the past and future. Is that it? Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner Holzkiller.
Where are we at with replacement of Chief Crown?
Currently, Captain Chief or Chris Anderson is the acting chief. Where the search is still open, and Chris is going to agreed to be acting through June, and so we're going to continue our search and look for the right person.
Anything else for the director? Thank you.